Hey there, and welcome to episode one of Cyberpunk Librarian, the open source writer. I'm Daniel Messer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode one of Cyberpunk Librarian. My name is Daniel Messer, the Cyberpunk Librarian, and today we're going to talk about the open source writer, basically getting things done with open source, writing utensils, writing tools, and software that you don't have to pay for. So about a couple months back, I pulled a trigger and published a new book on Amazon Kindle. If you have $5, reading it isn't a bad way to spend an evening. Probably get through it in an evening. It's not very big. I think it's only like 190 pages or something like that if you put it into like a standard book form. But I want to do a little talk about what I used, because writing that book turned out to be kind of an experiment. See, I wanted to see if I could do an entire book using nothing but free software from start to finish. And the point of this is if I could do that, then anybody else could too. You didn't need expensive software or any paid software at all, and no proprietary software to write a book. Is this possible? And as it turns out, yes, it is very possible, quite easy. And I want to share about that because if I can do it, anybody can do it. And this really opens the door for self-publishers, people who have always wanted to write that book, but they weren't sure how to go about it or what tools to use or how much money they'd have to lay out. And as things turn out, they don't have to lay out very much money at all. I used a 5 or 6 year old laptop computer. It was a Toshiba Satellite. And I know it's about 5 or 6 years old because I got it roughly the same time my daughter was born. And my daughter is 6. So yeah, that's about right. It's probably 6 years old. So this isn't the latest and greatest tech. This isn't state-of-the-art. It really wasn't even state-of-the-art at the time. It was just an affordable laptop computer. It wasn't an ultrabook or anything like that. It weighed about 5 pounds, so it was a brick, but it did the job. So I wanted to see if I could use something that was older, and of course, this by now it would be cheaper. You know, a 5 or 6 year old computer you can probably pick up on Craigslist or your local Facebook group for maybe $200 or less. So I wanted to see if I could use that and open source software to write a book. And the answer is, of course, I could. So we're going to talk about that, what I used, how I did it, and how anybody else can do it as well. Because this opens up the doors for everybody to write a book, and I think that's very important. I think that's very liberating, especially in this new economy of self-publishing, where anybody can throw a book up on Amazon for a couple bucks, and, you know, maybe they'll only make $6 off of it, but hey, at least people are seeing it, and at least it's available. So, let's get to that. Librarian who's gone to library school, and most of you have heard about the 5 laws of library science developed by a guy named Ranganathan. Now, I'm not going to bore you with the whole history of the laws, but I do want to give them to you and talk to you about how these apply to self-publishing and the e-publishing revolution. So the first one is that books are for use. The second one is every reader their book. The third one, every book its reader. The fourth one, save the time of the reader. And the fifth one is that the library is a growing organism. Now, self-publishing and the e-publishing revolution fit really nicely into these laws from a librarian's point of view. Books are for use, and e-publishing offers a way to distribute more books than ever before. I can place millions of copies of my book into people's hands, and I can do it using a small flash drive. Now, granted, millions of people aren't exactly clamoring to read my book, but the opportunity is there. The second law dictates that everybody should have access to any book they need, regardless of social standing. Other than the expenditure for an e-reader, e-books can be very cheap. Mine is only $5, and there are plenty out there that are 99 cents or free. So even better, a person with a cheap e-reader has access to all the classics and a wealth of other information for the low, low price of free. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, pretty much any place that serves e-books has a free section that has, you know, most of the public domain classics, I grant you. But at least they are there for free. They can all be loaded onto your standard Kindle e-ink, which I believe new is $65 or something like that. I picked mine up for $35 secondhand, so they're fairly inexpensive to get. And you can fit almost all of those books on them. You just need to download it, and you know, whoever's using it can learn how to do so at the local library. That's part of what we're there for. Now, the third law boils down to the idea that each item in the library will be useful to at least one person. And I think that's, you know, I think that everybody has a story to tell. And because of that, everyone has at least one person who wants to hear that story. Maybe it's just the storyteller's mom. I mean, I'm sure that that's the thing. But maybe it's also millions of people. It's hard to know until you tell the story. Either way, because the average person can write and publish, there are new doors to useful content. Saving the time of the reader is very important, and thanks to large services, or sometimes in spite of them, like Amazon.com, Smashwords, and so on, we can quickly find the book we're looking for with just a few simple keywords. My book is about libraries, technology, and science. If you search for those three words in the Kindle store, my book comes up with scores of others. You can get all you need. And finally, library's application of the fifth law could use some work. Far too many libraries just simply will not buy self-published work because it's self-published, which is sort of a vicious circle. Well, I would like to sell this book to the library, but it's a self-published book, and therefore the library won't buy it because it's a self-published book. Never mind that there have been many, many examples of self-published books being picked up by a big six publisher or big five. I think someone bought someone else. It's hard to keep track. But, you know, one of these self-published books got picked up by a big publisher, and suddenly a library will buy them because apparently the big five or big six publisher gave it some kind of legitimacy it didn't have before. See, I don't understand that. If it was a good enough book for a publisher to pick up and make a quote-unquote real book out of it, then there was no reason not to buy it to begin with. It was already a good book. This is the case with, of course, 50 Shades of Grey is the first one anyone's going to think of when they think of this. But this also was the case of, I believe, Aragon was a self-published book to begin with. And, you know, because it was self-published, libraries wouldn't buy it. Well, it got picked up by a big publisher, just like 50 Shades. And then libraries couldn't keep it on the shelf because for a long time, the kids and the young adults really liked it. They even made a movie out of it. Movie wasn't that good, but we'll just let that go. So too many libraries won't buy anything unless they get a starred review in some major literary journal or something else equally fabricated and nonsensical. Never mind that some of the greatest writers of all time were self-published at one point or another, unless Library Journal, Publishers Weekly, Booklist, the New York Times, Book Review, or someone else has talked about it, then it pretty much does not exist for a library collection. So libraries have some growing to do, and they need to remember that growing isn't just a good idea, it's the law. Specifically, it's the fifth law. Now, let's move on to the actual meat of what we're going to talk about, and that's free and open source publishing, or FOSS. I will use these terms interchangeably during this show and during subsequent shows. So if I say FOSS, F-O-S-S, that's just the acronym for free and open source software. You might sometimes hear someone say FLOSS, F-L-O-S-S, which is free Libre and open source software. There's some philosophical things in there. I think FOSS sounds like something different than FLOSS, which is why I use it. Anyway, FOSS is a great equalizer for the aspiring writer. All one needs is a computer or access to a computer, and that person can be a writer, given the right tools. And that's what we're going to talk about. What are the tools? The computer doesn't have to be particularly new or powerful, as I said before. Mine was several years old. I got it on a some kind of doorbuster sale at Best Buy. It wasn't even Black Friday or anything like that. I think they were just clearancing them out. And, you know, it was a Toshiba satellite brick. And like I said, it probably weighed 5 or 6 pounds. It was not light. It wasn't designed to be light. But that computer lasted me 5 or 6 years. That's really good, actually. That's not bad for a laptop computer. So the computer actually doesn't even have to belong to the writer as long as they can wrangle up a flash drive or a Google Drive account or something like that at the library. So let's take a look at what I did, and I can show you how a writer can make their own ebook on the cheap, yet still produce excellent results. So my system was simple. I used a laptop computer running Linux. I didn't do this because I wanted to prove anything, that you can write on Linux. Cory Doctorow already did that for me. He and I both use a Linux laptop, and I happen to really like KDE. Now, KDE is short for the K desktop environment. I have no idea what happened to the A through J desktop environment. I guess we don't talk about them. But the K desktop environment is absolutely gorgeous, and I love it. If I had my way, I'd have two kinds of computers in my house, those running KDE and those running OS X or OS X. But every time I see OS X, I say OS X, so I'm one of those people. I like Windows, but I prefer the other two operating systems. I have a Windows computer at my house, and I rarely use it. Most of the time, I use my Mac Mini, which I'm recording this show on now, or I use Linux. So my decision to use Linux and KDE for my writing environment is mostly based on one thing, personal preference. Yet it should be pointed out that I paid nothing for the operating system on that computer, and I pay nothing for any subsequent upgrades, and I pay nothing for updates. They can drop a new version of KDE and Linux next week, and I can install them and pay absolutely zero. So they've already got kind of one up on the last few years of OS X updates, though Mavericks was free, and I think there's a reason Mavericks was free. So out of the gate, the initial cost beyond the laptop is zero. Now, there are plenty of other laptops out there running various flavors of Linux. If KDE isn't someone's cup of tea, or if they're running a slower system, they can roll with another desktop environment. That's one of the great things about Linux, is if you don't like how your desktop looks, you can use something else. So there's several. There's LXDE, which is very lightweight, and there's XFCE, which is also very lightweight, a little more feature-filled than LXDE. I'll put links to all of this crap in the show notes so you can kind of look them up for yourself. I know it sounds like an alphabet soup, and if there is a downfall of Linux, actually there are several downfalls of Linux, but if there is one major one, it's the fact that Linux people don't name things very well. But anyway, everything else I'll talk about will work on those systems as well. However, everything else I'm going to talk about today will work on any system. I am a huge fan of cross-platform usability, what a friend of mine, Nightwise, calls sliding, where you slide back and forth from operating system to operating system using tools that will work in all operating systems. So from here out, all the software I talk about will not just work on Linux, they will also work on Windows, they will work fine on OS X, they will work pretty much anywhere. So if you've already got a Windows laptop or someone already has a Windows computer laying around and they don't want to pay a bunch of money to Microsoft for Office, they don't have to, and we'll get into that. So I write in two environments. Most of my writing goes into dumb text editors. There are plenty of those out there. It's almost like a programmer's or a developer's sort of first test if they can write a text editor. So there's tons of them. Some are good, some are crap. Since I use KDE, I use Kate a lot. K-A-T-E, just as it would sound, is the default text editor for KDE in most cases. It's exactly what it is. It's a fairly dumb text editor. If you're programming something in, you know, PHP or HTML, it has code highlighting and stuff like that. But if you're just typing text, it does text just fine. So I typically write in just a simple text editor to start things off. Even as I'm reading, you know, reading and writing my notes now for this show, I'm looking at Google Drive, which will work everywhere. And the only reason I use Google Drive over Kate in this case is because I can work on this thing at, you know, on my downtime at work. I can work on this thing here at home on any computer. I can work on this thing on an iPad, on my Android tablet, even on my phone. So I use Google Drive a lot for stuff like that. And if that's available, by all means, use it. It's pretty much a slightly smarter text editor than a dumb text editor. It's not as feature-filled as your average word processor, but it does most of what you need. So the things I used were Linux, so I've covered that so far, Kate, which is just a dumb text editor, and Kate is what I write pretty much all my rough drafts in. I have this sort of style where I might have some notes, and I kind of know what I want to say. I may or may not have an outline. And then I just sit down and write. I don't much care about spelling mistakes, grammatical stuff. Well, I go back and fix that later. I just need to get something out on paper. If you've ever watched a guy paint a picture on a canvas, one of the first things that that person will do is just spread stuff all over the canvas, and that's their background. Is that what the background is going to look like when they're done? No, of course not, but they need to get something down to start with. And that's what I'm doing. After I do my initial writing in Kate, when I'm ready to actually start editing it, when I'm ready to clean things up and actually make it readable, because my first draft is often totally unreadable, even to me, I'll take it and just simply copy and paste it into a program called LibreOffice. Now, LibreOffice, it has a storied history. Back in the day, I used to use an open source office suite called StarOffice, and StarOffice seems to have become OpenOffice, and then there were some political and commercial wranglings within OpenOffice, and OpenOffice split into LibreOffice. So I use LibreOffice. It's what I've been using for years, and as far as word processors and office suites go, LibreOffice will probably do 99% of what you want it to do, and if there's an extra 1% you're missing, it's probably because you need something very advanced that probably 99% of people won't use. So I use LibreOffice for everything. Even on my Mac, I have LibreOffice installed for word processing needs. I don't use Pages. I really don't use Microsoft Word unless it's my work laptop, which already comes with Word. I use LibreOffice for all of my cleanup and tighten up writing, for all my editing. So as soon as I paste something into LibreOffice, you immediately start getting the red squigglies that indicate all the words I've misspelled. You get the green squigglies, which indicate it doesn't understand what you're saying because your grammar sucks. You get all of that just like you would in almost any other Office package. So after I get that in, I go through it again and start tightening, changing, fixing, correcting spelling, all the stuff that you kind of expect to do when you're writing something. Now, as an essayist and occasional short story writer, I don't typically have long form stuff. My latest book is just a collection of essays. So even though it's a book, it's basically just essay one, essay two, essay three, so on. So when you're writing an ebook with LibreOffice and most Office programs, you want to make sure that you lay things out properly to begin with, and that'll make for a better ebook in the end. And one of the ways that you do that is for all of your chapter headings, you actually want to use the heading format in the writing program. LibreOffice, just, you know, like Microsoft Word, has like heading and paragraph and so on and so on. It's usually a drop-down. Set your chapters to be headings. So chapter one, or, you know, chapter one and the name of the chapter, that's a heading. Because when you convert this into an EPUB or any other kind of format, those headings will automatically become your index. So you're saving yourself a bunch of time just by doing that first. So if you've got multiple chapters, set all your chapter all your chapter breaks to be headings. It'll look good on the page, but it will also become your index when you create an EPUB document. So my book wasn't huge. Like I said, it might be 150 to 190 pages. I don't remember. Since it's an ebook, it's hard to tell because if you adjust the size of the font, if you adjust the size of the line spacing, it changes the overall length pretty much. So I didn't have a lot to go through, but I spent probably 2 weeks just going through it, editing it. I gave it to others to look at. You know, it all depends on your style. If you want to do a lot of editing or just a little editing, it's up to you. I remember reading once that one of my writing idols, Isaac Asimov, would write something, then he would edit it, and then he'd send it off. Now, granted, he had professional editors working for him, but he would write, edit, and he was done, on to the next. So that's kind of how I work. I typically write something. I'll give it two passes on an editing run. What I'll typically do is go through it the first time and just hit all of the really big stuff that is obvious. And then my next pass through, I will read it very carefully, trying to be as dispassionate and objective as possible, and make sure everything makes sense. And then I'll fix whatever doesn't make sense, fix anything I might have missed. And then I'm done. I'm off to the next. With this one, I gave it several passes to kind of at least bump up the quality a bit. Though I gotta admit, after the second editing pass, I didn't find a whole lot. So once I was done, you know, you can save this as a document. LibreOffice automatically saves as open documents, so it can be opened by LibreOffice, but you can also save it as a .docx file, .doc file, things like that, so it's compatible with Microsoft Office. So if the person you're sharing this with doesn't have LibreOffice and has no interest in installing it, you can save it as an Office document and send it to them that way. It will work. After I was done, I had this, you know, fairly lengthy document that would be my book. But unfortunately, open document format, .docx files, whatever you have, those aren't EPUBs. And I've really not found a good word processor anywhere that actually will export to EPUB or MOBI or any other sort of e-publishing format. But thankfully, LibreOffice is kind of like Firefox in that you can get extensions for it. And I found an excellent extension, which I will, of course, link in the show notes, called Writer to EPUB. And it does almost exactly what it sounds like it does. Within LibreOffice, all of the separate programs have their own sort of name. So, you know, Writer is, of course, the word processor. Spreadsheet is the spreadsheet, so on and so forth. So Writer to EPUB is just taking your document in Writer and converting it to EPUB. Simple. And if you have already gone through and made your chapters headings, it automatically handles indexing for you. Not indexing, that's not fair. It handles the table of contents for you. You can create an index if you like, but I didn't bother. I didn't think anyone was going to use my work for scholarly reasons anyway, and if they did, they're probably crazy. But I did I had it create my table of contents, which is very useful, and it handles things like metadata. You can import a cover image into it, which I highly recommend you do. You can basically set everything up. You tell it the title of your work. You tell it who you are as an author. If there's a publishing date or information like that, you can pop that in. You can write a description of the book and put that in. Add your cover image. Click, you know, Writer to EPUB. Click Convert. It converts. It took maybe 40 seconds on my laptop. Keeping in mind, this is an older laptop. It took maybe 40 seconds, and when it was done, I had an EPUB. I was able to pop it on a EPUB reader, like an e-ink reader, and it looked great. Looked absolutely great. Looked fine. But there is a small snag with that. And the snag is that with an EPUB and me selling it on Amazon.com, That doesn't work, because even though EPUB is an international standard for an ebook, Amazon.com apparently has no interest in that because their Kindles do not support EPUB. So I have to convert it to get it up to Amazon.com. And if I'm going to convert it, I want to see it. So I want to make sure that after I convert it, I can look at it. And as it happens, another free and open source software program to the rescue, and this one is called Calibre. Some people pronounce it as Calibre, it's C-A-L-I-B-R-E, but if you watch the demo videos and you watch any of the tutorials done by the people who make this software, they call it Calibre. So I'm going to sort of defer to them in that it's their product. I think they know what they want to call it. So Calibre is a, at its heart, it's an ebook library management system. It's sort of like iTunes for ebooks, but it has so many cool features, and it's one of those things where I learn something new about it, it seems, all the time. Anytime I need to do something with an ebook, I always sort of wonder, I wonder if Calibre can do that, and a quick Google search later tells me that, yes, it probably can. I might need a plugin, but plugins are free too. So I got Calibre installed, which I use anyway because I've got several thousand ebooks, and imported my EPUB into that. Now, Calibre will read almost anything as an ebook. So EPUB, it has no problem with. And beyond just managing ebooks, Calibre also converts them. So if you have a bunch of EPUBs and only an Amazon Kindle e-ink to read them on, Calibre is your best friend because Calibre can convert EPUB into Mobi.mobi, and Mobi files will work just fine on an Amazon Kindle. So that's exactly what I did. I imported my fresh EPUB into Calibre, ran the conversion, and then put it on my Kindle. Looked fine, looked great, cover image came out pretty decent, especially for e-ink. And after I was done with that, I said, okay, this thing is ready, and I signed into my Amazon.com account and went into the Kindle Direct self-publishing thing, and within about, 10 minutes, however long it took me to fill out all the little form pieces that they want you to fill out, I had it up on and online. And when you upload something to Amazon Kindle Direct for sale, it usually takes 24 hours for them to get it into the store proper. And that was pretty much what happened with mine. You know, I uploaded it at night. I checked it sometime the next afternoon or something like that, and it was already online. They say 24 hours. It's usually much quicker than that. I guess they're giving themselves some padding, some room there to work. So all of that, all of the software, all of it that I used, including the web browser that I used to upload it to Amazon, I paid nothing for any of them, and they all work perfectly fine. I, as someone who's used Microsoft Office for years, even though it's not my preferred thing, I saw no difference between the functionality. I saw no difference between the abilities of any of these things to create a book, and specifically to create an ebook that I could put online and start selling. Now, I'm not going to rake in the money on this stuff, and I don't pretend that I'm ever going to get rich off of my writing. I write because I enjoy it. And it's so simple, as you can see now, to share it online and maybe make enough money to have a nice dinner at McDonald's. Why not? Why not share it with the world? You can tell everybody that, hey, you know, I'm a published author. And if they, you know, make a big deal about being, well, you're self-published and not real published. Well, yeah, but so was Louis L'Amour and a whole bunch of other people at one point. Lots of authors tend to start out as self-published authors. So I ignore that criticism, and I just go on about my day. So that is how I got myself a book up on Amazon.com. It's actually my second book, and only use the open source stuff to do it. If I can do it, anybody else can do it. So the next time you have that writer's group at the library, or you have someone come in and state that they're interested in writing something, but they don't have the money to shell out on Office 365 or the latest version of Windows or anything like that, they don't have to. They can do it all for free, and they could do exactly like I did, and they'll have a book online before they know it. So thank you for joining me for this episode one relaunch of the Cyberpunk Librarian podcast. I intend to get one of these out about every other week or so, maybe more often than that, but I can at least guarantee every other week. Every week might be a bit of a stretch with my hectic schedule, family life, all that kind of stuff, but I can probably get one of these out every other week without any problem at all. So watch your iTunes feeds or subscribe to the podcast on the site, cyberpunklibrarian.com. I have a new site there, which has all of the same stuff as the old site, but at least it's got its own name, its own look and feel, and its own flavor. So check it out, cyberpunklibrarian.com. I'm Daniel Messer, and if you need to get a hold of me, you can always do so at cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. I check that very frequently, and I try to respond to absolutely everything I get. Incidentally, you're listening to Billionaire by Carol. The opening track was Belly Dance to Bisou by Ryo Miyashita. And all of these tracks came off the Free Music Archive, someplace you should check out if you're looking for some great indie tunes or just something different than your normal everyday top 40 hits. Good stuff there, and you can use them in projects as long as you credit them. And I'm making sure to credit them because they're pretty freaking awesome, actually. So I'll link those in the show notes. I'm Daniel Messer. I hope to see you next time here on Cyberpunk Librarian. Take care now.